Hey, Open Mic Podcast listeners. Want to share your opinions, give me feedback, or tell me what you're thinking? If you do, send me a voice message. Voice messages are an easy way for you to send me audio that might end up in future episodes of the podcast. They're the latest feature from Anchor, the platform that I use to make this show. Here are some things that I would love to hear from you. What questions do you have for me? What did you think of the episode? What did you think of the topic? Who should I interview next? Make up a theme song. I don't know. Do your best impression of me. I'll see all of your messages and I might add them into a future episode. Anchor makes that part super easy. You can send me a voice message right now from wherever you're at, wherever you're listening. Just tap the link in my show notes and I can't wait to hear from you. Again, thanks for listening to the Open Mic Podcast. Until next time, cheers and be well and enjoy today's episode.
It's time for the Open Mic Podcast with your host, Brett Allen. Broadcasting live from the Bay Area studios, here at the Open Mic, no topic is off limits. And of course, you never know who may stop by. So sit back, relax, and enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Open Mic Podcast. It's good to be here with you today, episode 84. We are trucking right along, and it's also National Podcast Day, so shout out to all my fellow podcasters who put out a show. Eric Hunley of Unstructured, Heather Brucker of Motherhood in Hollywood, Deanna Aspire, You Can't Sit With Me, everybody, there's so many, I can't even keep track. All of you who do shows, you put out amazing work. Of course, Joel Byers, he has a podcast as well. Hot Breath, we're going to talk to him here. He is hanging out on the line in just a quick minute. I hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. I had a great one, of course. And it's back to work tomorrow, so I wanted to put out an episode just because I have great guests lined up and I cannot wait for you to hear them. And of course, it's National Podcast Day, so it's just a really special day. Never in a million years did I think I would be celebrating such a significant holiday for podcasters, but it's really kind of a big deal, so it's fun and honorable to be a part of it. It's been a great weekend for me over here, just chilling out, hanging out, and ready to get back to the grind tomorrow. Halloween's coming around the corner. That's the next big holiday that we've got. Got to buy my kid a Halloween costume, so that's some shopping that has to get done this week, because apparently it takes a while for them to arrive to your home, so there's all of that as well. Anyway, we're going to get right to it. My guest today is Joel Byers. He is a comedian out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I am super excited to be chatting with him. Joel, welcome to the podcast, sir. It is good to have you. Thank you so much for joining me and being a part of the show today. It's a pleasure and an honor, and I'm super excited to talk to you. Joel, welcome in.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yeah. So let's dive right in and talk about your podcast. It is called Hot Breath Podcast. I love it. Where did you come up with the name for that?
The name is so funny because even when I plug it at my stand-up shows, every time I say it, people laugh. And I don't know why, but it all started like I was just a fan of Terry Gross and her show Fresh Air on NPR. So I like the quick Fresh Air. So I was looking for like a quick hit kind of show name like that, and I just brainstormed some, and that's the one that stuck.
I love it, and it's funny that you say that, because when I heard it at first, I was like, that does kind of sound like something that you would hear on NPR. Like, they have all kinds of shows, you know, and some of them are comedy related, and I was like, that would be like the perfect fit. So is that what got NPR's attention about your show, the title of that specifically?
That was all through StoryCorps. I did an episode through their StoryCorps. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but you can tell stories, and then some will get broadcast and some won't, and they ended up doing like a write-up on their website and all that about it, where a comedian interviewed me pretty much about like my origin story is what it ended up being. And you know, they haven't caught on to actually hiring me yet, but I'm getting there.
Yeah, that would be great. I love NPR. Ira Glass is my favorite. All of those folks over there. That's what kind of inspired me to do my show as well. One of the things, actually. So that's super cool. Now, I want to rewind the clock a little bit and talk about your background, because I understand you come from a family of educators. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah, my mom is a teacher, and then my stepdad was a teacher and then principal. So it's just, I've been around it my entire life.
So it would make sense then that you teach stand-up as well. Now, how did the, and we'll get into that in just a minute, not to divert super quick there. How did you get into, how did you get into stand-up comedy? Because I always find it such, and I say this in the most respectful way, the most unusual thing that somebody can do, because it's just so interesting. And every comedian I've talked to, we all agree, it's just such a unique thing to watch somebody get up there and tell jokes for 5, 10, 15 minutes and make people laugh. And you make it look so easy, but really it's not. It's probably one of the most difficult things that you can do. How did you get into stand-up comedy, Joel?
The difficulty is what I love about it so much, is that it is just like a joke is like a magic trick that you reveal that people don't even realize that it's all structured and all intentional and it was a sleight of hand, but it's just a magical, oh, we laugh just at a rhythm of 3 laughs per minute for an hour, just based on luck of this guy. It's like, no, every move, you know where every breath is along the way in a stand-up set. And I've always been a fan of stand-up, all the way back to Sinbad and the Afros and Bell Bottoms special he had wearing his jumpsuit. And I didn't start to pursue it, though, until my senior year of college, second semester, where I was like, well, I have nothing else to lose. You know, I have all these loans, so might as well pursue a profession that pays well. So I decided on comedy, which that's the first joke I've said so far, is that it pays well. It does not, but I love the challenge of it. I did it second semester of college, the first time I did it. It was in the side room of this club called Side Splitters that is now closed, but there was probably 10 people there, including the staff, and nobody really laughed, but they politely smiled. And that, from then on, I was hooked. And that's, if it wasn't second semester of my senior year, I would have like dropped out and just been like, this is what I'm doing. But I figured, you know, go ahead and get my loans worth, finish the drill.
There you go. Interesting.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing stand-up comedy now then?
Eight and a half years. I started February 1st, 2010.
Okay. Now, I've seen your stand-up and you've performed a lot. Now, do you primarily work in Atlanta, or do you just go wherever? Do you go to LA? Do you go to New York and work the clubs there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm based out of Atlanta, which Atlanta has... It's the scene right now. It's booming right now. So many people you're seeing on like Comedy Central and Netflix, and even the writers of shows you may not even realize are from Atlanta that have since moved to like a New York or LA. But one of my motivations for starting the podcast was I want to do it all from Atlanta, but I do still, you know, I call it like, watering my seeds. So I will go to New York and LA periodically. I just got back from a week-long trip in LA doing shows out there and doing interviews, but you just kind of go back to these scenes just to kind of water the seeds you planted. But home base is still Atlanta. And one of my favorite quotes from my podcast, my buddy Tyler Chronicles, who's actually on taping a show in LA right now, WeTV, he said that he's not going to move to LA till LA moves him there. And
interesting.
I feel the exact same way. I'll move there for work, but I'm not going to just relocate and restart.
Well, no, especially if Atlanta is really the hotbed right now of comedy, which is, I find that very interesting. Now, speaking of your podcast, you started it originally to feature Atlanta comedians that were on Last Comic Standing. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So were you on Last Comic Standing? I've only seen a couple seasons of it, so I'm not super familiar with the show.
No, I wasn't, but what I had noticed in this year was we had 10 comics from Atlanta that were in like the semifinals of the show.
Okay.
So, and then which a comedian from Atlanta, Clayton English, ended up winning it.
Yes.
That year, and the year before, Rodman won it, and he's actually from Atlanta as well. So I just thought it would be a cool like time capsule of the scene, and really just kind of a stamp of like, okay, here is really where the scene started to get all this like national notoriety. So it started out, yeah, just kind of like a time capsule of like, I just like this to be a point of reference when the scene does go down in history as like really a respectable place where you can really become like a comedy legend, that this was a big tipping point in that, you could say. So it since has evolved into me just interviewing well-established comedians and bookers and club owners and managers and agents. And it's really evolved into just like, I call it now your weekly guide to comedy mastery.
Sure.
But the nucleus of it was all Atlanta comedy. And I still like to keep that at the heart of it.
Very cool. And I would say, yeah, you've had some huge names on there. So you started out doing it that way. Now you have all kinds of people on. How do you go about choosing which comic to have on? Do they reach out to you or do you reach out to them?
It can go both ways. What's crazy is like probably my biggest guest, Bo Burnham, his people actually reached out to me while he was in town for a film festival promoting his new movie, Eighth Grade, which if you haven't seen, it's awesome. But yeah, his people actually reached out to me. So it can kind of go both ways. But a lot of the time it is me reaching out to these people and understanding like what their expertise is and what and how I can extract that and capture it on the podcast. Because I really want, you know, for these interviews, I don't take who I put on this show lightly. And I don't, because one, you know, I've created this standard of expectation, not only production quality, but also interview quality. So I research these people intensely. So I want to make sure it's someone that not only is worth the research, but then worth the time investment to do the interview, and then worth the time investment for all the post work that goes on, you know, through putting the video together and cutting together social media clips and just the whole assembly line that you now understand from doing a podcast. Like, people think you just talk into a microphone and then it magically appears on the internet, but there's a workflow involved to podcasting that people don't understand until they get into it. So I make sure my guests are worth that time expense.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
you do the video too, which is intense in itself. And it's funny because unless you have like the Adam Carollas or the Joe Rogans, where you can go in and talk for 3 hours and then someone just swoops in and does everything for you.
Right, right.
You don't have that benefit. I believe you have people that help you, which is great. But even still, there is a workflow that goes into audio editing, making sure it sounds great, production, equipment, all sorts of different things to get it up on the airwaves for people to listen to. And then you go, well, I don't even know if anybody's going to listen. I hope they do. but I'm not quite sure.
I was going to say, I think it is important to first do it yourself, though. I do now have an audio engineer who I'll record and then just send it all, like record the interview and the intro and outro and then just send it all to him and he puts it all together. But like starting out, you know, so many nights, I'm up till, you know, I release an episode every Monday at 8 a.m. I had a lot of nights early on. I'm up till 3-4 in the morning editing the audio, putting all the clips together, like getting the whole episode ready. I used to record the intro and outro like in my closet, hunched over this microphone, like cause that would like be the best sound. Like I think it's important for everybody, especially starting out, to at least learn whatever skill set they're trying to outsource, just so they understand what they're asking of other people. So then you can kind of communicate on their wavelength, you know?
Yeah. And Jordan Harbinger has said that before as well. You know, he's thankful that he did it all for himself for a long time, because there's you can outsource it if you really want to and if you want to pay the money. But really, at the end of the day, you know, it's light work in most ways, you know, unless you're doing a lot of other different things. But no, I would love to outsource show notes. I hate doing show notes. I think those are the worst. But Dave Jackson says they're probably one of the most important things that you do of your podcast. So there's that as well. That's too funny. So
that's like SEO?
Yeah.
Like getting search relevant?
Yeah. And like make sure everybody has their social links and their website, that you're describing the podcast well. So whatever algorithm iTunes uses, you know, to help you find things, like there's just a lot that goes into it. And so he actually does a masterclass on how to do show notes. It's interesting. He has it on his website. Yeah, it's very cool. And there's a reason why he was inducted into, you know, I believe the Podcast Hall of Fame, or not quite yet, almost, but he's very respected in the podcasting community. And, yeah, so there's all of that as well.
And that was Dave what?
Dave Jackson. That's okay.
Okay, cool.
Jackson, yes. And I can send you over the info as well. But I'll connect you with someone else here after we're offline here that you should get in touch with, who has a lot of that technical side of things as well. But anyway, those who are listening now are like, okay, now they're talking shop. So
I love it, though. But yeah, go ahead, buddy. Sorry,
for
Brett.
Sure. No, you're fine. Don't worry about it. It's easy to do in this sort of thing. So you bring a lot of different guests on, and you made the comment that it's kind of your weekly guide to comedy mastery. So you really are peeling back the curtain to a lot of us who don't really know about comedy and how it works. So when you bring a guest on, like a Bo Burnham or, you know, D-Ray Davis, any one of those people, like, how do you approach your interview with them? How do you know this is what I absolutely want to get out of this person for the next 30 or 40 minutes that I have them, to make it worth their while and to make it worth your while?
Well, it's first off kind of under researching where they come from, like kind of, you know, diving into their origin story, which can be through either, you know, social media. You can learn a lot from people. Also just previous interviews and different articles they've done and things like that. But I always try to look at what is their, they may be good at a lot of things, but like what is their expertise? Like, what are they known for? Are they a really good writer? Are they really good at like developing characters on stage? Are they really good at the business side? Have they written a lot of TV pilots that then have gotten picked up by television? Like, I look at really what has driven their success and what seems to be their unique. 'Cause that's what I love about comedy, is that there's no real right way. There's only your way. So everybody's kind of finding their own way in this. And I like to find what their way is and then just, yeah, then from there, just dive in as deep as possible. And to not only just like, oh, so you wrote this TV pilot. That's cool. No, it's more like, you wrote this TV pilot. What was your process? How did you come up with the idea? Where did it start? Where did it evolve? How do you pitch it to television? What is television looking for? If I wanted to write a pilot, what should be my process to writing it? And then also how to get it in front of the right people. What's the process for a pitch meeting? Is there a flow to it? Like, really all their expertise I like to just capture in that hour.
Very cool. And that's the thing, is you have one shot essentially to get all this information and get it out to people. It's not like you can say, oh, can you come back and, you know, we can redo this. So you really, in your game particularly, well, I think in podcasting in general, but for you specifically, you really have to bring your A game, because there's some pretty big names that you've had, and they're all been really good conversations. So I wanted to ask you, and I asked this of all the comics I've had on, and I've had a few, do you think there is a difference between being a stand-up comic and a stand-up comedian? Is there a delineation between the two in your opinion and perspective?
I mean, to me, I think funny is funny. Like, I guess the delineation is like, one says things that are funny, and the other says funny things, I think is what I've heard. I don't really put too much thought into it, really. I mean, as long as you're getting laughs and it's on your material that you've worked out, I don't really mind if it's someone who's like a Robin Williams who can just be authentically funny in the moment and, you know, just find humor just in being who he is, or if it's just, I don't even know if an example, maybe like a Henny Youngman who is just more like quick liners and things like one-liners, that it's more all in the writing. You know, I think as long as it's funny, we're all trying to get to the same end goal, which is a laugh. So however you get there, I'm cool with it as long as it's like your unique style and it's not, you know, not just something you've stolen from someone else, but it's actually something you've put in your hard work into. Yeah, I'm cool with however you get there.
Now, you mentioned a comment there about stealing, which I want to ask you about that. So you're like, uh-oh. No, so there's been controversy over the last several years. I don't want to get into specifics because I don't know who's going to listen to this, but there comes this problem where a comic will write a joke and then another comedian will hear it and go, oh, well, I actually wrote that joke first. How do you struggle with the tension between intellectual property and premise and writing a joke? Does that question make sense, to avoid getting into that pitfall of, well, who wrote it first, Amy Schumer or, you know, whoever? We might want to edit that part out. But
you're fine. And it's even like that, yeah, there is stolen joke controversy. And it's even in the Amy Schumer example, it's kind of like, I wouldn't really want to say those jokes anyway. Those are more kind of like, those are just kind of like bar jokes. You know, those are more generic jokes. And I mean, I'm not by any means like saying anything ill-willed toward Amy or anything like that. It is just like, that's, and she has more personal material as well. And I think that's what's important for a comedian to understand, is that nobody can steal you. So let's say so many people are married. Everybody could write a marriage joke, but what's going to make yours uniquely yours is that it's based in your own truth and your own experience. So someone could steal that joke about a story of you going to the park with your wife, but if it's personally to you, it's only going to be funny through the filter that is your funny.
Sure.
So that's what I always tell my students, is at the end of the day, like, no one can steal you, and the more personal, the more universal your material is going to be. So that's something that took me years to really understand, is just really trying to get into that more personal perspective on things.
Sure.
But it's super powerful.
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, and then there was the whole Carlos Mencia thing for a long time. And that was huge. I think that's really first where it came out, was when Joe Rogan confronted Mencia at the Comedy Store, and then the whole Mitzi Shore thing, she wouldn't book one or the other, and then David Shore wouldn't book one or the other. And fortunately, it's all worked itself out and everybody gets along. But I was talking to Jeffrey Gurian just not too long ago, and we had a conversation, and he recently was performing at a club in New York, and he had jokes on cell phones, texting, newspaper, whatever. Simple premise things, right? But then Jerry Seinfeld showed up and wanted to do a spot to work on new material for Netflix. And so he asked if Jerry wanted to go first, and Jerry said, no, let Jeffrey go. And then, I need a few minutes before I go up, so let him go. So he had to change his whole set because, ironically, the jokes that he was going to tell are very similar to the ones that Jerry told. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And he got interviewed and said, oh, man, I'm so glad I changed my set, because I would have done some of the same types of jokes, at least some of the same premises. But a premise is a premise, from what I understand, as you said. And so, but it's really the story itself, I guess, that kind of makes the joke unique. Whether you're doing what, observational comedy, someone like a Jim Gaffigan, or, you know, you're doing commentary like Seinfeld, that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, I guess if it's funny, right? You know, that's all that really matters.
But we're all living in the same world. So we're all drawing from a lot of the same environmental triggers. And there's definitely such things as parallel thoughts. I've had there was a dude in the Oscars. My wife just told me, like, the line I used to propose to my wife, even what she just said, a dude at the Oscars proposed to his wife at the Oscars, like on TV. And he said the line I said, it's like, and even like, I've seen Daily Show jokes or like people's tweets. I'm like, oh, I literally had that exact same joke. Like, it was not like verbatim, but like the premise, like,
sure.
Daily Show, I remember back in the day, had something about like white ISIS, and I was working on this whole bit about it for really like a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden I saw that, and I was like, oh, well, that's at least a good sign. You know, it seems like for Jeff, it's like, hey, I must be on the right track if Jerry Seinfeld and I are thinking on the same wavelength, you know?
Sure.
So it's always a compliment when you're like, oh, we're at least thinking at the same level if I'm making jokes that a place like the Daily Show would make a joke,
right,
or Colbert. I've seen parallels too. It's it can be disheartening, but I always like to just roll the punches and just look at the positive side of, like, instead of, oh, I guess I can't do that joke anymore. It's more like, hey, that's a good sign. I'm onto something here. If comedy at that level is what I'm thinking at, then we're on the right track here.
Sure, and I think it's funny you said white ISIS. I think Dave Chappelle did a joke about that on Saturday Night Live, which is kind of funny.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
I'll take that too, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You're doing a great job, by the way, I have to say. I think you're funny, and if you ever get out to the Bay Area, let me know. I would love to come watch you. There's tons of clubs out here. So I wanted to wrap up by asking you about your comedy class, which I think is very cool. They do that here in the Sacramento area. They teach stand-up 101, 102, where you can work with working comedians, and they can teach you how to write a tight five and how to do an act and stuff. And how did that start for you, your stand-up comedy class?
Well, actually, like, coming up in the comedy ranks, I thought comedy classes were hack, and I thought it was just
people
for,
say
like,
that a lot.
Swindlers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I was never into, like, I'm going to teach a comedy class. But I knew comedy, there's so many different skills you can bring in. And I was actually taking improv classes. So I knew that would enhance my stand-up comedy. So I was at a theater here in Atlanta called High Wire. I took their improv classes. They started a sketch program. I was like, oh, well, understanding how sketch writing works would help me to develop on-stage sketches and maybe a TV show down the line or something. So I took all their sketch classes as well. And then the founder, Ian Covell, asked me, he's like, hey, have you ever thought about doing a stand-up class? And then I had to give it a little bit of thought because, you know, as comedians, a lot of the times we're worried about what other comics are thinking. And it was like, well, I don't want to be that guy who's doing a comedy class. So I had to give it some thought. But I realized, you know, they get a bad stigma. So this is an opportunity for me to do one the right way.
Sure.
To try to help maybe, you know, break through that stigma and understand there is a right way and a respectful way to teach stand-up comedy that's not just exploiting people for a paycheck.
Sure.
So it all started with me first paying my dues through this comedy theater that has then grown into, like, a comedy class. It's an 8-week class that I love it because, like we mentioned, I grew up in a house of educators. I've always had, and I'll do it with my comedy, and you can tell with my podcast, I like, you know, the educated entertainment spin on everything I do. So whatever I'm doing, I want people to be learning from it.
Sure.
So the class is just another outlet to do it. And I learn every single week because in class, the students are performing every single week, because that's really how you learn comedy, is by doing. So we go over writing techniques and performance tips. They'll work them out through the week, and then they'll perform in class and get feedback. So I'm learning just watching newer comics, or even, you know, I had like a 15-year comedy vet take the class as well, just trying to get back to the basics. But it's every week I learn something new just from observing how people and what their unique approach to comedy is. And it's really become very rewarding, I gotta say.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, you mentioned the fact that comedians make jokes about stand-up classes. Oh, the community college this weekend is doing a stand-up comedy, you know, and well, chances are if you have to go to a comedy class, then you're not going to be funny. But I don't necessarily think that to be true, because comedy is, I feel, this enigma that is wrapped up inside of a mystery. And if you don't know how to start, you got to start somewhere. And so if you can take a class like from yourself or from an actual comedian that you can find out about and it's legit, I think you can learn, you know, how to write a joke. I think there is an art to that. I think there's an art to delivering the joke and how to know when to start and when to stop and how to work a crowd. You know, it's just a huge thing. So I think that, you know, even Jeffrey Gurian was saying that he has mentored comics before and taught them, you know, that wasn't funny. Well, it happens all the time, even on Last Comic Standing. Right. They had mentors like Wanda Sykes and whoever was on the show that particular week would mentor these comics and go, don't do that joke. It's too blue. It's not your personality. It's not really funny. You know, and I think that's cool. If I was there, I would take the class. I think it's awesome. and it's great what you do. It's hilarious. So, again, if you ever come out to the Bay Area, definitely hit me up, man. I would love to come see you perform.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm working on online courses right now. I just started a podcasting one. So even if, like, if any of your listeners, if they want to hop on the podcasting course, they can use like a discount code Hot Breath Pod and they'll get $10 off of it. Because that's another thing, you know, teaching, I just love doing it. And so many people are asking me about, every day I get podcast questions. Sure. So I was like, let me just give them a resource that they can then go and get everything they need to know about starting a podcast. So that's for the open mic listeners out there. If you guys are interested, it's you know, it's a lot of things that, just like with my stand-up class, you know, it's a lot of things I had to learn the hard way so you don't have to.
Sure.
So it's either way, like you said, joke structure and all that, and learning what your voice is. Yeah, you can spend 10 years doing that, or you can get that in 8 weeks or whatever. But just make sure, if you're trying to teach, if you're trying to take a comedy class, like, don't just dive in blindly. Really, like, look at the person, research what their credentials are, what their intentions are. Like, it's just like with any business, there's going to be people that it's their passion, and there's going to be people that just do it to exploit people for the sake of financial gain. So really, I think it's worth investment in your craft if you just do the homework first.
I agree with that. I think that's a valid point, because ideally at the end of a class you want to be able to go to an open mic night and perform, you know, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever your time is. And here in the Bay Area, there are open mic nights everywhere, like all over the place. And I'm not just talking like the big clubs. I'm talking like, you know, restaurants do open mic nights. There's a comedian here, Tony Sparks. He's huge in the Bay Area. Huge, huge, huge. He opens up for everybody that comes into town. And he runs this underground comedy scene where he does open mic nights. Yeah, he's the greatest guy. And he just does all kinds of things. And he teaches, but he also invests in young comics who want to learn.
Great.
You know, he'll do an open mic night like twice a week where you can just come in and there's no heckling. There's, you know, none of this, none of that. And it just provides, you know, because they say it's probably a year or two before you're actually funny. But he creates this environment where people can build their confidence and perform and get laughs, you know, even though it's not just your group of friends that laugh, but everybody. And he thinks everybody has the ability to do it, you know, it just might take more work than others to get them to that point. So
I agree. I think at some point, yeah, it becomes on you to do the work, you know.
Sure.
People see a Netflix special, it's an hour, but they don't see the 20 hours of failure behind that special.
Mm-hmm.
So
or the 20 years.
That's the work.
Yeah.
Or the 20 years. Yeah. I mean, that's, people don't understand the work. Just like with podcasting, same thing with stand-up. You don't just go up there and are accidentally funny. Like, everything is honed in. Mm-hmm. Like, everything's purposeful. It's pretty much like a script when you see someone special.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So if people want to get a hold of you, Joel, how can they do that?
On my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. I was actually meeting with my web designer yesterday. I'm revamping my podcast website to be just like a landing page for everything. So
sure.
That'll all be linked from joelbyerscomedy.com. But in the meantime, you can get links to my podcast, links to my online podcasting courses on there. My schedule, if you guys are around and whatnot, around Atlanta, or maybe you can see I'll be out in your area, which I will have to get to the Bay Area. What's so cool about us crossing paths right now is just yesterday, I had a comedian from the Bay Area send me a video on Instagram talking about how helpful this week's episode was and how much he learned and how much he appreciates. And that kind of feedback, like, I've had people DM me, but I've never had someone record a video and like talking directly at me. And I'm like, yeah, this must be a sign I need to get out to the Bay Area. Cause I've been traveling more and more, you know, I've been starting to headline a lot more. So that next step is really, you know, hitting the road a lot more. So I definitely would like to stay a part of the open mic podcast community and would love people to join the Hot Breath podcast community. It's on iTunes, you know, Spotify, Stitcher, literally everywhere you can get a podcast. The YouTube, I literally accidentally deleted my YouTube about a week and a half ago. So I'm just now transitioning to a Hot Breath podcast channel. So right now it's just youtube.com/hotbreathpod. There's only one video on there right now, but I'm rebuilding that now. It was a tragic day that took some time to recover from mentally and emotionally, but it all happened for a reason. So clean slate. So there the video, the Instagram Hot Breath Pod, I cut up, well, you know this too, and on Facebook as well, Hot Breath Pod, I cut up video clips of all my interviews too. So you can go and actually watch them on there as well. But yeah. Thanks, Brett. Keep up the grind, dude.
I appreciate it. Well, we've been chatting with Joel Byers, comedian, podcaster, teacher. Thank you, Joel, for being a part of my show today. I really appreciate it.
It was an honor to be here, Brett. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Joel, for being on the show. Be sure to follow all of his social links, which will be available in the show notes. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Check out our website, theopenmicpodcast.net. Until next time, let somebody know that you love them, let them know that you care, and be well.
That brings today's episode to a close. Thanks for listening in. If you enjoyed today's episode, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a kind rating and review. It really does help. Until next time, cheers, and be well.